Hi, my name is John Kim. I'm a therapist who went through his own rebirth many years ago, and I've been documenting my journey ever since, sharing my life lessons and revelations. I believe in casual over clinical, with you instead of at you. I come unrehearsed on purpose because self-help doesn't have to be so complicated.
So here's the part. Can we go into the joy
part?
Yes,
joy.
Am I talking too much?
No.
Okay.
That's why you're here.
I get fired up. So when we have chronic hypervigilance and we have chronic trauma, our brain structures get stuck in, this is sometimes called negativity bias. You can talk about the default mode network if you're familiar with those terms. But basically what happens is your brain is running a script that the world is dangerous. And that script is like when the TV is on in the room and it's like playing Seinfeld all the time. And when you're doing something and you're engaged, the TV's on, but you're not really paying attention to the plot. But when things get quiet, that it's almost like you turn the volume up, even if you didn't actually turn the volume up, right? That TV show is always running in the background. When your default mode network is stuck in a belief that the world is unsafe, that other people are unsafe, that you are in danger, that's the script that's running behind the scenes all the time. Mm-hmm. And that can make things like joy feel completely inaccessible. And yet we know from the neuroscience that if you can tap into joy, hope, and gratitude, you can rewire that system. So now we just have to figure out how to build the bridge. How do you, when you're stuck in negativity bias, seeing all of the danger and all of the negative, how can you welcome joy back into your life? How can you lean into hope? Because I know from my clients, I'm sure you see this too, if you tell someone, oh, just have hope. You know, the first time I actually did that with a client, she was like, go fuck yourself and closed the computer. And that was it. That was the end of the therapeutic relationship. Mm. Huge relational fail on my part. And I was right that that's what she needed. I was absolutely wrong about the delivery, right? Because she had had a childhood of absolute chaos and she was rage. And rage was coming out at work. It was destroying her relationships. It was about to ruin her relationship with her children. And I was like, where are you getting joy? Where are you getting what John calls nectar? Mm-hmm. And she's like, that's a luxury. I can't afford. Fuck you. Mm-hmm. Which is a completely legitimate response. Like, she was right.
This is great for me because it is a science behind what happened to me that I didn't know was happening at the time because I was surviving. And this is... you know, speaking of nectar, I use tattoos as bookmarks of my story. And I got this. Oh, nice. I got this. So when I was miserable and I went through a divorce and I had nothing and I was broke, because I had nothing to lose. And so joy for me was, well, I could either get depressed and be angry and miserable, which is how I've been living. Or I could start to try to find some joy in my life. And so it was almost a survival mechanism. And so styrofoam coffee, Wayne Dyer in my ear. Mm-hmm. I bought a motorcycle. Mm-hmm. It was a cheap little Ducati 620. And I rode the shit out of that thing by myself. I found CrossFit. And I found joy in connection with other people, pushing myself physically. A donut every Friday, because that's all I could afford. But it was those little things... experienced, threaded into my life where I created what MC calls the bridge. So I used to just, my default was dread and worry. So I'd wake up, dread, worry. And of course that came from growing up in a family where my dad was always like, how much did we sell? Oh my God, you know, credit card debt. And oh, you know, we're not going to make it in America. That kind of, you know, when you're 10 and trying to absorb that. Mm-hmm. So when I was 35 and broke, and the marriage fell apart, I felt like I was in panic mode. And so I didn't know I was doing this. I didn't know the science behind this, but it was finding what MC calls the tiny little joys over time that created a bridge. And then I think I slowly, I mean, it took 10 years, but I'm not miserable anymore, you know? And of course there are days that I'm you know, discouraged and sad and all that, but my default isn't worry and dread. Mm-hmm. Even if I don't get sleep, it's never worry and dread, right? It's gratitude comes in, hope, joy, and I find it in the mundane, which I was never able to do. So it's an ability, you know? Before, I would only be happy if I won the lottery. I would only be happy if I got the hottest girl in the room. I would only be happy, you know, all those extreme things, right?
And none of those things make you happy, right?
Right.
What's that?
None of those things make you happy.
Maybe for a short time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but yeah.
You gotta choose happy.
But I didn't have the ability to have a scone and a good conversation and find joy in that. Or a nice motorcycle ride and find joy in that. Or a 3-minute ice plunge and find joy in that. I never had that ability. To me, that's stupid. That's silly. How is that going to progress your career? You know, like that kind of stuff. But 10 years of what she's talking about, the tiny little joys and finding nectar, that now I do have, it's like a muscle. Now I do have the ability to say, this silence is nice up in the woods, or this air is amazing, or, you know, stuff like that.
Because you recalibrated the system, and then the Seinfeld turns down, and you can see what's actually there.
Yeah.
It's not filling in all the rooms. The thing is that I find so miraculous is that we get the calculus wrong when we think, okay, I've got a big bad thing, I need a huge good thing to counterbalance it. That's actually not true. If you get a million little tiny little things, they can absolutely obliterate that big huge thing. And when we miss them because we're looking for that big huge thing, then we are missing out on a million opportunities every single day to imprint and feel into what else is there. We get tricked into thinking that the negative, that the scary, that the trauma is the only thing that's true about the world, about other people, and about ourselves. And it is true. I'm not trying to say that the trauma isn't there or it isn't real, but it coexists with beauty and hope and joy, and that is a miracle. I have a really funny story about this. So I was practicing this tool of tiny little joys and kind of developing it, trying to adapt some things from positive psychology to be more useful for people who have a trauma history. And I had given it to this client. I was working with her on finding tiny little joys, and she ended up getting involuntarily admitted to the psychiatric ward. She got a 5150 for total wrong reasons. She was completely fine, very rational. This was someone's, she was in a very abusive relationship, and this is what happened. And when you get admitted in the state of Florida, you stay for 3 days. And not anything you can do to get out for 3 days. There, you are under watch, and the belief is that you're a danger to yourself or others, and so you're there to stay. And so she was very freaked out, tried to convince the doctors to let her out. This is a mistake, right? Which, of course, everybody does in that state. And then she remembered tiny little joys, so she started practicing them, and she was like, okay, I can't have my phone, I can't have my people, this is really terrifying. And there are mystery novels here in the common room, and there is Judge Judy on the TV. And then she taught the rest of the psych ward about tiny little joys. And so they started shouting them out to each other whenever they found them, right? Oh my God, look at the sunlight. Look at this tree. There's fruit here. I love these socks, right? Like these tiny little things that they were shouting to each other. And they formed this little community, and they are still in touch. She invited the psych ward to her house for Thanksgiving.
Wow.
And they were able to develop this glue around this. So the other thing is that when we practice it as a community, we are teaching each other, hey, remember, like, yes, there's the bad and there's all this stuff.
I'm going to make t-shirts that says, I love these socks.
I love these socks.
So is that one thing that you notice going to change your life? I mean, I think it's reps. I think is developing where that's your go-to, that's your default, instead of thinking the sky's falling, right? So it's not because you noticed the scones today that suddenly you're healed. It's the ability to notice things more, where you then start to create a bridge from fight or flight survival mode to, like she said, spectrum. Yes, there's bad, but there's also this.
Yep. Yeah. And the next step, so the little journals that you have, I designed, and it's a journal. It's a whole year of tiny little joys. So each page has a week, and each day has a block. And you can write, or you can draw, or you can put a sticker or whatever you want to remind yourself of the tiny little joy and keep you in the practice, because it is reps.
Yes.
It is when you're recalibrating the system, we so often in our society look for the quick fix. Mm-hmm. Let me go just go mm-hmm. do a bunch of ayahuasca and I will be cured of my trauma, right? Not that that can't be a formative experience, of course, but everything, it's a journey. It's a long, long, long journey. The second thing, once you start noticing them and bring yourself to that, and listen, sometimes it's hard. Like when I'm having a tough week, I am sitting in my house, like, find one thing.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. One thing. Yeah. And it can be really hard to find them, and that is okay. But once you start being able to do the reps, the second thing is to imprint them. Our brains are wired to imprint negative. Because that keeps us alive. Mm-hmm. If we remember everything bad, then we will most likely avoid it. We have to manually imprint the positive. And so what that means is that not just that we notice these things, but that we feel into them, right? So when I sit in my, one of my favorite things is that I live right around the corner from like the middle school. And so the kids come by every morning and I hear them laughing and shouting at each other and singing at the top of their lungs as they ride by. And I try to sit there and just be with it and feel what that feels like in my body. Mm. Where is the joy? Does it feel like a tingling? Does it feel like a burst? Does it give me goosebumps? Mm-hmm. Where does it start? Does it start at my feet? Does it start at my center? Because when you're doing that, you're delving deeper into the experience and imprinting that it's there. So neurons that fire together, wire together.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when you wake up every morning and you're like, I am awake, dread, I am awake, dread, I am awake, dread, that mm-hmm. becomes a really like deep mm-hmm. neural pathway that then gets shot down really quickly. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you push the neural connection to another place, mm-hmm. yeah, and you start to then make that connection deeper. And so instead of dread, you go, it's Monday.
20 days before my habit.
Yeah. And also, if you can imprint and train yourself to find joy in your life, mm-hmm. How do you think that ripples into relationships? How do you think that ripples into friendships? I mean, mm-hmm. then you can actually start to see good instead of taking the black light and seeing all the things that are wrong, mm-hmm. you know? I think my point in that is that it affects all areas of your life, mm-hmm. not just, you know, the time you have with yourself.
There's a thing in happiness research. It's find, remind, and bind. Mm. And this is about gratitude practice. You just reminded me of this. So find, remind, and bind. Find things that people in your life do that you are grateful for. Remind yourself of that experience of like when Julia said when your friend showed up for you, like you remind yourself of that and then bind to the other person by expressing the gratitude.
Mm.
The really cool thing about when we're doing that, because there's so much stuff about gratitude that feels very empty, but when we're doing that practice, not only do we increase intimacy in our relationships and create that glue to stay together, but we also are actually flipping on something that's called the hope circuit in the brain. Mm-hmm. So one of the really cool things about brain circuitry is that your brain kind of operates a little bit like an old house, where the circuits, certain things can't be online at the same time or the circuits will blow, right? So in my very old house, I can't have the air conditioning on and the hair dryer on at the same time because the circuits will blow, you know what I mean? The same thing is true in your brain. When the fear circuit is online, it takes all the energy. So you can't hope for the future, you can't imagine, you can't feel gratitude, it's inaccessible to you. The cool thing is that since those circuits are counterposed is when we turn the hope circuit on, we by necessity turn the fear circuit off. And so if you spend 5 minutes at the end of your day with your partner saying, hey man, here's three things you did that I really appreciate, I feel gratitude for, you're spending 3 minutes in the hope circuit that you wouldn't have otherwise. And that's another thing that can help you rewire the brain because you're turning down that hypervigilance that can become a fixed state.
You could literally see on our faces and the eyes the fear circuits.
Dwindling. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As hope and calm. Yeah. Because in the beginning it's all fear, it's etched in fear, and then breath, and then starting to see hope, and then actually tipping where now I enjoy the sunlight, now I'm calm, oh, I can do this forever, like that.
Yeah, there is a tipping point for sure.
Yeah.
You show that so we know that trauma changes our perception of the world, right? We go from thinking the world is safe to thinking the world is mm-hmm. dangerous, or maybe we grew up thinking the world is dangerous, mm-hmm. but you just had the opposite experience where you're like, maybe the world is safe. Maybe these things are good. And then the world literally starts to look different.
Mm.
and you start to actually see, like, it almost looks like your perception has changed, because you're like, no, wait, my car is different. My experience of my car is different.
Different lenses.
Right? Yeah. Like, and then you see that everything in the world that we experience has significance. So, like, if you think of someone who's struggling with insomnia, right, you might go from thinking your bed is the most comfortable, safe place in the world to, like, your bed now becomes this monstrous, awful specter where you're like, it's bedtime again, right? And then when you cure your insomnia, your bed, like, our perceptions of the world change.
So this is my definition of rebirth. Rebirth isn't some, like, you know, dramatic. Mm-hmm. It's this. Mm-hmm. It's the subtle noticing of things that you didn't have the ability to notice before. It's the list of 20 gratitudes that you're able to do now. It's these kind of, like, because, you know, I think in the day-to-day, these are the things that change your life significantly. It's not the, you know, the weekend in Bali or the, you know, like the ayahuasca maybe, but it's these things, because it's what we live with daily, you know. There's this, I mentioned it before, that I don't play golf, but in golf, if you just swing maybe a millimeter, the projection of the ball, the distance is completely indifferent. And I feel like things like the tiny little joy or gratitude, these things are the millimeter things, but stretched over time, the ball is now in a whole different place. Mm-hmm. Definition of trauma?
Unbearable emotional experience that lacks a relational home.
Trauma isn't just sexual assault or combat. Trauma can be someone stealing your skateboard, right? Mm-hmm. Depending on your experience, the meaning attached, right? And going back to this definition of unbearable emotion, and then also not having home, not having a safe tree, not having safety. An argument can be traumatic, right? Thanksgiving can be traumatic. Mm-hmm. A lot of things can be traumatic. So knowing that, and then knowing what trauma does to you, the word that really resonates with me is integration, right? Healing to me, I mean, I get it, but I feel like it's so overused. So I like new words that aren't used that much. Like, healing is like, now it just doesn't mean anything. But integration, what does that look like? And something like tiny little joys, where you're now starting to rewire by creating this bridge. So it isn't just that the sky is falling and bad things happen. Yes, and there's a little tiny flower that's beautiful and full of, you know.
Right.
So it's the and part that creates the bridge, right? I never had an and part, and that's an ability to create the and, to create the and.
Both can be true.
Both can be true.
Both are true.
Well, they are true, yes. Yeah, yes.
Yeah. Yep.
Most people who are unhappy live in ore. I'm either rich or broke.
Right.
I'm either, you know,
in love or
nothing. Like, it's extreme. It's and life is not that way. So the bridge comes in the end. I'm single and I know what I want now. I'm lonely and I have a lot of friends. I'm, you know, so it's that, I think what happens is life actually comes in color. In all colors, not just primary colors, right?